Oh, well, about this big demonstration we were going to have against the shipment of scrap iron to Japan. You see, Fawn, we had been fighting for years against this fascist threat that really came to blossom with Mussolini and then Hitler, and then Hitler formed this anti-communist pact. It was called the Anti-Comintern Pact. The whole world knew about this.
With Japan.
And that Japan, Nazi Germany, and fascist Italy.
Yeah.
Italy was the first fascist country. And so, in fact, I really should have told you, I'll tell you first about this demonstration and then we'll go back, because this was part of the fight that we conducted in support of the loyalists in Spain, because if the fascists had been defeated there, that's where the Nazi troops and the fascist Italian troops actually were allowed by the Western powers to go in and destroy the legally elected government of Spain, which was not communist by any means. But of course the fascists come to power by anti-communism, and that's why you have to always be, you know, you think twice when somebody begins bringing up being anti-communist all the time. Just remember the whole history of fascism, all those people came to power on the basis of anti-communism.
I witnessed it.
So anyway, we, I and one of the longshoremen's wives went down to one of the restaurants where longshoremen have their breakfast when they're waiting to be shipped out, to get information about a Japanese ship coming in. And we heard this conversation about a certain Japanese ship arriving a certain day. So we reported that. It was decided to have a big demonstration against the shipment of scrap iron to Japan. At that time they were sending the remnants of the elevated transit systems that they were taking down in New York.
Mm-hmm.
They were shipping them to Japan, and of course the left knew that Japan was building up this war machine to support Hitler and Mussolini and his own interests.
Which the public didn't really know.
Yes, but the public didn't pay any attention to this, just like we're going to stay after that. So we had this demonstration, and actually there were only about a handful of longshoremen on the picket line, but there were seamen and barge workers and a lot of cannery workers. And then it was held on Terminal Island, and we had arranged that at the very, just like the movies, at the crucial moment when the longshoremen are going to go back to work after lunch, all these big buses of Chinese arrived from Los Angeles. And so the longshoremen refused to go through. They said that they were endangering their lives. It was against their contract not to go ahead and work, except unless there was a danger to their lives. So they used this and it did support the picket line. However, the leaders of it were not very happy because most of the men went, because they were losing money, they figured. They really, most of them wanted to work, although there were a few that knew what was going on and supported the idea. Anyway, it rained all night. We kept that picket line going all night. There were hundreds of people, and Helen DeHagen Douglas and Marilyn Douglas, you know, came down and spoke for a few minutes in the rain, and a few other prominent people, I don't remember. Anyway, then in about 2 weeks we had another one. It was much smaller, and we didn't get support from Los Angeles, except I think one or two little buses of Chinese came.
Well, who were the Chinese?
For the Chinese community in Los Angeles.
Yes.
You see, they were being attacked by Japan at this time. Japan was just bombing China to hell.
I see. And this is a protest.
You know, killing their
yes.
people.
Yes.
So the
yes.
Japanese people naturally were going yes. to support any anti-Japanese
yes.
Scrap iron. In yes. fact, we had in the left wing, there were some Japanese people that supported us on the picket line. One was Mary Nakamoto. She was wonderful. In fact, she was the only one. Blair wrote a letter for her, and they did not put her in the camp because she had taken part in these anti-Japanese, you know, picket lines.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only case I know of this. Anyway, I, which I didn't bring up before, I'll just go into, while I was at WPA in New York, we had carried on the same fight for Loyalist Spain. And many of the people we knew, our two best friends, Harry Hines that I mentioned, and Cecil Kunstler, he worked with Blair during the day on the longshore business. He was a wonderful person and a wonderful organizer. Well, he went to Spain. He was so bright, he learned the language rapidly, and he was immediately sent to work behind the enemy lines. He was in the fascist territory. But then nothing more was heard of him. He must have gotten killed.
Mm-hmm.
And Harry Hines, he could have aided them so much because he had had military training, but he was so modest, he just, you know, went in the front lines, and almost like the first week he was there, he got killed on the Ebro. He lived with us in New York in one of these tenement houses. I think I told you, we always lived in these cold water flats. They ranged from $12 to $18 a month, and we would move at least in the summertime, we would take a cheaper one because we didn't need any heat.
Mm-hmm.
And that would usually be like $12 or $14
a month. Mm-hmm.
And they wouldn't have a bathroom. They'd have a toilet, but the
mm-hmm.
bathtub would
like
be
in the kitchen.
But we always lived on the top floor because you had plenty of light. You had to walk up, but when you got there,
you had light and a view.
Mm-hmm. And every time you moved in, it had been newly painted. Mm-hmm. So you see, we moved into one of the cheaper ones in the summertime, and you would get a month's concession, they
yes,
called it.
Yes.
You didn't have to pay for the month
and
for the first
yes.
month's rent. Then when it began getting cold,
you'd move
we would move into one company. That just might have a little heat, which helped a lot. The kind of heat they had was, you know, it would have a radiator here. And that might run to $18 a month, but it would be freshly painted. Well, I should have gone a little into the details, you know, living in there. Practically everybody we knew lived in these cold water flats. And I don't remember ever having, I don't think they had refrigerators then, did they? We didn't even have ice boxes. I remember putting things in the wintertime out on the windowsill.
Windowsill, yes.
And in the summer, I guess you would just buy what you were going to eat that
and
day.
And consume it immediately.
But then when I stopped to think, you know, Blair was always bringing somebody up to dinner that he was working with. Cecil, you know, they organized a couple of Teamsters, and I would get something ready to eat in 5 minutes. I don't know where I kept anything when I come to think about it, but that takes me away from the fight for the Spanish loyalists. Anyway, we collected a lot of money for them, and you know, the United States went along. Roosevelt was pretty good on most issues, but he went along on this no shipping on either, no helping either side. But the
neutrality,
yes, which was a farce because the Nazis and the Italian fascists were. They were so close in the first place, they were coming over with planes, bringing all the materials. The only ones that were supporting the Spanish loyalists were the Soviet ships would go in. But then with the neutrality and, I mean, it was just sickening. And if the What if the United States and England had, and France had supported the Loyalists, really supported them that time, I doubt that you would have had World War II, because it could have smashed down both Hitler and Mussolini then.
At the same time.
But there were so many people in all these countries that really, they'd been worked up with this anti-communism, and they figured these countries were going to, they were going to get rid of the communists, so they would support them.
Yeah.
And that's what happens all the time. Anyway, later on, I mean, it was really peculiar at the time, the Longshoremen's Union wasn't very happy about our having these picket lines, and but when the, after Pearl Harbor and the United States was in war, then they really bragged about they were the first ones that refused to ship
scrap iron. Hindsight.
Anyway, after for earning a living while I was in Pedro for 2 years, I got a job with the SRA, State Relief Administration, in Long Beach.
Oh.
And my area, it was really funny. I didn't know how to drive a car then. And to get the job, you had to have a car and you had to know how to drive. So I said
that you did know how.
I did know.
And that you drove.
Then, anyway, so I got hired. And so, but an Hispanic friend in San Pedro went with me. I went down and got a $45 Model A Ford Roadster. And she went with me the first few days showing me, and I got a beginner's license, and then I got a license, and I drove around all the time. My area was Bellflower, Artesia, Norwalk, all this was sort of
Bell Gardens. Did you?
Bell Gardens, I think so.
Well, you said Bell.
I said Bell and Bellflower.
Oh, Bellflower.
Bellflower. I mean, I don't think there's such a thing now except the street. I mean, it was so different then.
Yes.
It was like a rural area,
yes,
and it was mostly Hispanic people that lived there. And there was quite a progressive administration there. That's probably why I got the job. But woman in Los Angeles that was in charge of the whole thing was very progressive, and then it was decided to turn relief back to the counties, and at that time we could get clothes for people. We would make orders for clothes. Of course, some of the social workers were bad, just like today. They acted as if the money was there, maybe give people the third degree, and if they, you know, asking them if maybe they earned a dollar one day.
Too much,
But then she was fired, and all the progressives were fired. And
when was this approximately?
This was at the end of 1939.
39.
Around that period.
Okay.
And then also in the CP, they had this policy, but this was the period where of the phony war. Have you heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the phony war was when the, well, it was so obvious that England and France didn't want to do, they wanted to build up Hitler to fight the Soviet Union. And so they weren't doing anything. Of course, shortly after that, all of the Europe fell, and then they began attacking England, and the situation changed, and then England was very glad to have Russia as an ally when they got in. But what was the question?
Can we have a little more detail about your work in Long Beach? Or were you leading up to that?
Well, my work in Long Beach, I was a relief investigator.
I know, and we would go to
cases, and I had to visit them. I remember the very first case I had. It was a couple. They were staying at the Salvation Army, and oh, did he bawl me out over the phone? He said, "I suppose you'll show up in a fancy car, and here we are, we don't have money for this and that."
And where was the Salvation Army? Downtown? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I remember that this office of the SRA was on Pine.
Uh-huh.
And I look at these buildings now, and I can't figure out where it was.
Uh-huh.
But that's where the office was, and I just did
would you,
regular cases.
How often would you check in at the office?
Oh, every morning.
Oh, every morning. You would start from there. That's why you had to drive.
Yes, we went in every morning, and then we'd go out.
And you'd get your cases assigned?
Yes. And you always had to do a little work in there. You know,
were they Spanish-speaking, these Hispanics, were most of them?
Some were Spanish-speaking, and
some were not.
Were not.
Mm-hmm.
And the terrible thing was, now and then you'd get somebody who had been on relief a long time, and they'd say, what we need to is a good war, and then maybe there'd be work for everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how demoralized people get when they're unemployed a long time. And so that lasted about 2 years. Oh, during that time, you know, we got a vacation, I guess. One vacation we went up to, we had decided we would take a vacation and to earn a little money we would do some agricultural work.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured we'd never been to Sequoia Park, we'd go there and we'd do a little cotton picking on our way.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
In the fields.
Yes, mm-hmm. But it was so hot, we went up to Sequoia Park and had a wonderful time, and then we read in the papers there that they desperately needed pickers of hops and prunes up around Santa Rosa.
Yeah.
And we described, come to the beautiful Jack London's Valley of Prunes. That all the hops and prunes were dying because we didn't have enough pickers. So we packed up and we went up there. And what a place, my guess. They had what was called the Singlemast Camp, was just an old dried up riverbed with stones on it, and the single guys would lie down if they had a blanket.
Wherever they had to find a space.
Because we had gone with this friend who had, he had returned from Spain. He was a Spanish vet. He had been fighting with the Loyalists. And he had this little trailer, so the three of us went. Well, the most any of us could ever make a day, first we started on hops. And starting with sunrise, and we worked till sunset, the most you could ever make was $1 a day, working all the time.
Did they weigh in or how long?
Oh, of course. You fill with hops. It's a great big long bag like you have for cotton, because it's just like tissue paper. It's so light. And so, anyway, to do it a little faster, I decided I would just put it through the thumb and the first thing and put in leaves and all. I got distressed and do that, and mine weighed more than either
because you're Blair's,
Blair's or our friend. Fred, I think his name was. And so Blair changed sacks with me one day, and that was the day he got caught for
that. He inspected it.
Yes, he inspected it. He said he'd be fired if he ever did that. But that was really funny. And in fact, we were out picking in the hop fields the day that World War II started, when England declared war against
Poland.
That was, we did have a radio up there, but somebody announced it when we were out in the
hop fields.
And
that England had declared war.
A bathroom in front of everybody working in the hop fields, and they always have somebody who's very experienced and can earn a little more, you just
to show you how stupid you are.
So, I forgot what they call them, but anyway, to go to the toilet, they had this thing on wheels and burlap, you know, on both sides. You'd go up there, but we'd start early in the morning because then there would be a little bit of dew on the hops.
It'd be easier to pick.
Way more. Yes, that's when we did better.
$1
a
day.
Yeah. And I'm sure some of the men peed on it now. Anyway, we got disgusted with the hops and decided to try the prunes. We went to another farm. The same thing there. You pick them from the ground, and the first droppings, as they call them, are fairly large, and they have local people that pick them. And local people may even pick the second droppings. But then by the time we were picking them, they were about the size of grapes.
And those are the third
droppings. The third droppings. And
so they're
standing on your knees, picking these up. Oh, this was even worse than the hot. And I revolted then, and I quit, and I just did the cooking for the end. What we lived on was mostly either spaghetti or beans, because we were trying to get enough gas money to buy gasoline to get back to
Los Angeles. Oh, I see, yeah.
And if we went into town to get groceries, it was cheaper. The company had a truck that came out and sold you groceries, and you paid more. But you paid the gasoline going to town just about half
an hour,
you see.
Yeah.
So we finally, after about 3 weeks, we made it back to Los Angeles. Of course, we burnt out the top of the motor. We stopped someplace in a second-hand place and got a new gas.
The ring? The gas?
The head.
Oh, yeah.
The head.
Yeah.
And we got a new head. Anyway, we got back all right.
Had you resigned from your job in Long Beach?
No, you were just on a vacation. Maybe it was just 2 weeks, Anyway, I was on a vacation. No, I didn't resign. As I said, it's still with the county. Welfare is now with the county. At that time, it was with the state. It was much more progressive setup.
Uh-huh.
And so then, in the winter of 1939-40, we had a visitor from the Los Angeles committee of the party. We used to drive in there for meetings.
But you were still living here
in San Pedro.
And working in Long Beach.
Yes. We lived in three different apartments, I remember. They were all about $25 a month furnished. And I don't remember why we moved around. the head of one of the leading people there in the whole progressive movement was this blind fellow, Padovan. And when we drive into these meetings in Los Angeles, although he was blind, he would give us the directions. He'd know where we were. He had become blind as a seaman later on in the seaman's hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, they gave him some medicine or something that made him blind. But anyway, it was really, there was a very big progressive movement there. The Yugoslavs, where we would show Russian movies and it would be packed and they would stamp their feet. Now all these people are middle class and some of them millionaires with this restaurant and that restaurant. It used to be a real working class town and rather a poor one, but now it's changed completely. It's very wealthy, and Long Beach at that time we always looked upon it as a place with just old people from the Middle West.
From Iowa.
Yeah, but now it's quite cosmopolitan with all the different nationalities here. Anyway, we got this, it was the
From L.A. Someone came to visit you from L.A.
From L.A. to this meeting, and they said it was the, I think they figured that that was at the time we were saying the Yanks are not coming, because it was a phony war, as I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they expected that the party would go underground or everything, so they were moving people around, and we were to go back to New York. And in fact, the person that came down to tell us, he became one of the biggest stool pigeons. He became, all these committees, even before. I mean, the MacArthur period really started right after World War II. But anyway, his name was Silver. His wife was a doctor, both of them. Anyway, so we took this trip to New York on this bus, the All-American, I think it was. It cost $25 from Los Angeles to New York, including meals. And you just stayed on the same bus all the time.
You just got off for your meals.
Yes. Uh-huh. And we had this terrible experience. A black woman got on in Louisiana.
Oh, dear. Oh, you went the southern route.
And she stopped. She sat, there was a seat by itself in the front. She sat there, the bus driver moved in the back. And he put her with a fellow from Chicago. And what surprised me, you know, all the Jewish people I knew were the most progressive people I knew. He happened to be Jewish, and he was so terrible. He was talking out loud in front of a, I don't know why I have to sit with this black bean, and I mean, just horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Blair and I were the only ones to talk to her. When she got offered the meals, she couldn't go in to eat with us. She had to go in the kitchen. She couldn't use the bathroom. She'd have to go out behind a bush or something. I mean, the whole thing, oh, it was so terrible, just sickening. And I thought when we reached Ohio, I thought, oh, I'll be able to breathe now. But it was just the same there. And, that was just a sickening trip. And I thought we were going to get lynched for, you know, being friendly.
For being sympathetic. Mm-hmm.
So we landed in New York, and naturally the first thing we rented was one of these little cold water flasks. And in no time, one night we were, I don't know what time of day it was actually, but Blair was always, he had ulcers. Well, he never went to the doctor, but, oh, he did go to the doctor because, the Spanish Civil War, you know, everybody we knew was going in to help the loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to have a physical. He wasn't
and he couldn't
through,
pass it.
But he couldn't pass
because
it.
Because of the ulcers.
Well, the ulcers, and they, oh, I forgot to tell you about that. Oh, no, that happened now. So he broke down one day. We were walking along the sidewalk. He couldn't walk any longer. He was bleeding internally. Well, I got him home, and I thought, well, it must be his heart, so I gave him some whiskey or something, some liquor, which is the worst thing,
because
that thins your blood.
Yeah.
Well, that didn't seem to help, so then I called up. I figured somebody said that if you call, the hospital, you call a certain number, they will send an ambulance. So I called the number, and they said, what religion? Well, because he was brought up Catholic, like a fool, I said he was Catholic, and he had no religion at all. So they send this ambulance from this small Catholic hospital to pick him up, and they tell him to get dressed. Well, of course, he collapsed going down the stairs and had a hemorrhage and gets in the hospital, and they wouldn't, there were regular visiting hours. I could visit in the regular visiting hours, but because he was Catholic and I was Protestant, or they thought he was Catholic,
yeah.
I said he was,
yeah.
I was just given the regular visiting hours.
Mm-hmm.
And they really expected him to die, and he expected him to die, but he could hear the interns wagering how long he was going to live. And he lost, he went down to about 120 pounds. He was about 6 feet tall. He was 6 feet tall. You know, so that was pretty thin. And we were trying to get him, we knew somebody who was a doctor in the Harlem Hospital, and we were going to try to get him there. But this hospital didn't seem to want to give him up because every hospital was given, they got paid by the city for a certain number of cases, you see. And of course, we landed in New York without any money. So every day I would call up the union. Now it had become the NMU, you know,
like
the respectable union, National Maritime Union.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it had been, the ISU, the rank and file ISU, and then when the progressives took over, it became the National Maritime Union with Joe Kern as the head. And then, so every day I would call up. They didn't have a blood bank. And I would get about 5 semen there, and they would test them. They had to have the right kind of blood.
Yes, I understand.
I had the right blood, but they wouldn't take my blood because they said I needed it for babies. Well, I had no intention of having any babies, so you couldn't tell them.
No.
But I didn't want to argue with them. I thought he was in their hands, and they were in a position to kill him, you see.
Yeah.
So it was really quite a difficult position. And they were trying to convert me so that he would go to heaven because he was supposed to die.
I think we're just about the end of our heaven.
So, anyway.
Thank you very much. This has been very, very interesting.
Okay.